This is a CNA podcast.
In my generation, making a living entailed getting a decent education, finding a job, and working hard for a pretty long time. The idea of having a side hustle or opportunities for making good money were not as prevalent simply because, well, I guess the internet did not exist the same way it does now. So things have indeed changed. A recent OCBC Wellness Index survey showed that young people want to retire early and they want a more luxurious lifestyle. And to get there, they're willing to bet bigger on riskier investments and look for ways to earn fast cash. In that respect, it's not surprising that an influencer or a gamer on YouTube can make thousands each month. You may have also heard of Titus Low, an OnlyFans creator who, according to court records, was making about $50,000 a month on that platform. So in this episode, we want to dig a bit deeper into the factors that are driving these changes. How does the lucrative online ecosystem change the way young people look at money and work? What does this mean for the workers of the future if you can make, you know, maybe 5-10 times more money creating content instead of being a nurse or a childcare teacher? With me to discuss this are Joanne Liu. She is Chief Studios and Content Officer at Gushcloud, a global influencer, entertainment and talent acquisition company.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Stephen, for having us on today.
And Nicholas Lim from the S.R. Nathan School of Human Development at the Singapore University of Social Sciences. Nicholas teaches and also works with the youth there.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having me on the show as well.
All right, welcome, guys. So, Joanne, I'll start with you. Some 10 years ago, I was just describing it, the company I guess you work for would not even have existed. Content creation as a job, as an occupation, is really new in this era. So, what do you make of that? Who are these people that are taking on these jobs? Do you feel that this really is a job as we know it?
It has evolved along the way, definitely. As of today, we do actually see it as a job. As a company, we see how sustainable being a content creator can be in Singapore, all the way to US, Australia. These people, if they're doing it full-time, they make anywhere between $2,000. Some of them make all the way up to like $50,000-$100,000 a month. And they start out really young, and it's really exacerbated with the introduction of the World Wide Web, social media platforms, and basically as advertisers start pouring money into these platforms, creators get paid well as well.
So, Joanne, help us understand how it all works, the business behind this. How does posting a photo, playing a game, commenting on a game even, how does that earn me a living? How do I get thousands of dollars just to do that?
There are various ways where you can actually make money online. Using YouTube as an example, you upload a piece of content. I'm sure when you watch YouTube, you get interrupted by ads before your content starts. In between, in the middle, you get like a few ads blasted in your face. These are ads paid for by advertisers, and basically YouTube splits the revenue of the ads with the content creators. So if I'm getting anywhere between 500,000 to maybe 700,000 views a month, YouTube shares about $2,000 with me on a monthly basis. That is like what we call ad revenue. The other type of revenue is where your fans gift you directly. So you see that on Twitch, you see that on OnlyFans, where you're actually providing a source of entertainment to your fans or to the viewers. People like it, they give you $1, they give you 50 cents. You accumulate that across like 10,000 viewers. It's no surprise how Titus Low can make up to $50,000 a month.
Okay, so it's a bit like pay-per-view. You pay, yeah. You get to, they'll do something, they'll put on a video for you. And I understand even on OnlyFans, you can even subscribe on a regular, like monthly basis, right?
Yes. There are other platforms like, you know, Patreon that's fairly popular in the United States as well. Instead of creating physical classes, like if I want to teach mathematics, right, I build up a curriculum myself. Instead of opening a physical tuition center, I upload the curriculum onto Patreon. Parents and their kids pay a monthly subscription fee, you know, to consume the content. And that is basically how I get paid as a creator.
Okay, so it doesn't sound so far off. I mean, I think back to magazine subscriptions in the past, you know. Again, I subscribe to The Economist or something. I get to read anything that they publish online. But Nicholas, what do you make of this whole lifestyle in that sense? Does this suggest that money can be so easily made? Is it perhaps giving our young ones the wrong impression of how life could be?
In my personal opinion, I think it does give the wrong impression to young people that money can be easily earned. I think we have heard enough stories where people try to embark on such a journey, it becomes very challenging because there are many other things involved. For simple fact that you need to know enough of taking the video, producing it rightly, making sure that your audience actually really like your content. So it can be quite technical. Sometimes it becomes challenging for somebody to, as young as that, to appreciate the technicalities of it and then to produce content like this and to sustain its effort to ensure that there is an ongoing stream of consumers or viewers in this case. And young people are not prepared for that usually because it takes so much effort. Usually they would like to have a good time. They like to have fun. They like to be connected with people. And sometimes getting to the heart of things like producing good content, it takes a lot of hard work.
But Nicholas, do these platforms suggest that when they look at others, we all have Instagram accounts and TikTok and you watch others and you think, wow, it's such a wonderful lifestyle, you know. Perhaps it's a bit misleading?
Yes, it does mislead young people. I'm not sure whether you are familiar with the developmental stages informed by neuroscience, you know, that for young person, they are fully developed at the limbic system. It's fully developed at the onset of puberty, right? And it's not until like around 25 years or so, plus minus, that the prefrontal cortex is fully developed. So what that means is that the prefrontal system is primarily responsible for regulating emotions, making meaning, making sense of things around us. But the prefrontal cortex is basically responsible for thinking of the consequences, making decisions. At a very young age, we tend to, quote-unquote, think emotionally and try to find, make sense of what matters to them the most. So if something was exciting and it matters to me a lot, I'll be driven by it quite a lot. And I quote-unquote think through that lens. And I tend to make decisions more from the limbic space as opposed to prefrontal space, which you would want to consider things like the kind of hard work I put into it, whether it's realistic or not,
okay,
whether or not this video is actually being edited, stuff like that.
But so you're saying because they're sort of swayed by emotions, they don't really think about all those things. They're just so caught up in the moment and go like, wow, it looks so good. You know, I want to do that too.
I wouldn't say they are sweet because they can think from the prefrontal, and it tends to be more helpful if there was somebody, preferably an adult, guiding them to consider those content they're consuming.
Right.
Like, for example, asking a simple question, what do you think they are doing? How did they produce this? What is it that excites you about it? To earn such money, what are the kind of things they need to do? If you can facilitate such conversation with the young person, that'd be more helpful, and then they can think from the prefrontal and make better decisions.
So, Joanne, we know that it's not all, you know, a bit of roses. Actually, a lot of the content creators spend a lot of time. For every one photo they post, they may have taken 50 other photos. But the success, I guess, we see online is very alluring. And maybe give us some idea of every one person that makes it, how many others are there that don't make it?
To be honest, what we find is in the creator economy, it pretty much mirrors the traditional entertainment space. And there's this saying that goes, 1% of the people make 99% of the money, leaving the remaining 1% to be shared with the remaining 99%, basically. A lot of people undermine the work or the hard work, like what Nicholas has mentioned, that's being put into being a full-time content creator. We do see these creators as micro-entrepreneurs, basically. They are business owners on their own, and when traditionally, when people start businesses, they tend to have a unique value proposition, right? Whether it's a service or a product, we find that creators, their unique value proposition is that they're able to provide some kind of unique service to their niche audience, whether it's a marketing service, you know, entertainment, information, or even education. With social media, it basically helps them transcend all these geographical boundaries, and not many know how to utilize the tools to actually make it.
But I like the way you call them entrepreneurs, because actually they are pretty much trying to start, make a living with their own one-man operation kind of thing. But some would still argue that you just spend 3 hours a day taking photos and you earn the same amount that I would, you know, in a month, you know. So I guess it's hard to justify that. And this idea of easy, fast money is very alluring. What type of content creators do you choose? Do you have a certain type that you'll say no to if they come in with the wrong impressions, the wrong ideas?
We do uphold certain values in GushCloud. Integrity, honour, being a couple of those. So definitely, we don't work with content creators who are out there to misinform people. And we work mostly with families, family content creator, parenting content creators. We really believe in using content, using your platform as a means to spread what we call positive influence.
But we have to admit that the negative influence from these platforms is very high. I think of the OnlyFans platform where you can use it to have educational videos, but we know that the more risque side of things where a lot of sex is online for all to see, that becomes the higher generating revenue source. So Nicholas, is it a slippery slope? I mean, how do we sort of keep our youth safe while allowing them to be creative?
It is a very slippery slope because at that stage of their life, developmentally speaking, there's so many needs that needs to be fulfilled. A sense of belonging, attention, knowing who I am, for example. So if the content resonates with me and allows me to know myself better, then that content will be applicable to me, developmentally speaking. So like sexual content, for example, or mental health content, you know, we talked about some of the influences that you mentioned about earlier has openly shared about his own journey of mental health, for example, and young people are going through those and then they could identify with that. So it plays right into their limbic because that's how they are going through life and experiencing life at that point in time, right? As the content are being released and as they're consuming it, it's a slippery slope. The moment you get into it, it's just, I want to keep coming back and coming back. So there's no knowing what kind of content that can possibly come out thereafter. And for a young person, they highly likely will not know the right from wrong or inappropriateness of the content, and they're just consuming it and they take it as correct or like this is basically how it should be, because maybe it could be that's what it's supposed to be, but is there anyone helping you to check that kind of a content that you're consuming? At that stage, I think it's appropriate to be guided because there's so many more things in life that right. You want to learn about.
And does Gush Cloud, Joanne, do something like that? Do you sort of try and help your young content creators, guide them, give them some idea? Because, again, some of them are new to the scene. They want to, you know, make it big. They want to be famous. But they may not know what it is they're really getting into.
To be honest, we don't really work with OnlyFans creators. We work with creators who actually see themselves as micro-entrepreneurs. And that's because our true intention is really to help them figure out how to make this as a sustainable career. We know that like in the traditional entertainment industry, sex sells, right? We all know the highest generating website out there is related to such content as well. But it's not sustainable because if sex sells, your beauty dies out one day. But what lives on? You can't have your career die out on you when you return 35 or you get pregnant or you have to give birth, you start a family. So what we really believe in is helping them figure a way out, building a brand for themselves in this digital space.
So you will tell them that no, we can't do this with you if they wanted to go on OnlyFans and start posting pictures of themselves. This is the kind of client that you will not work with.
It's not that we won't work with them. We won't encourage them because it's just generally not something we stand for. There are so many platforms out there that we can help them get onto, like Patreon, YouTube, or even TikTok.
Okay. But I have to ask you, why not just make it a very clear no? You say you will still work with them, but not encourage them in this area. To me, perhaps as an older person, it's very clear that this is not a platform I would ever want to see, you know, my kids on.
More often than not, creators are active on more than one platform. We will not engage with them on that specific platform. But let's say they are posting, you know, very regulated content on Instagram, for example. That's where we can help them on. But we will not be involved in their work on OnlyFans, for example.
Right. But would you sort of help guide them and tell them that essentially if you want to do and post these sexy photos of yourself and tell them why it's a short-term sort of career, why it doesn't last, in that sense, are these things mentioned to them?
These things are mentioned to them, not in a very like parental way, but in a very practical way. When you post things like that, your following is going to be mostly men. The brands that we work with, they are very wholesome kind of like brands that targets mostly women, families. So if you choose to brand yourself that way, you are essentially cutting yourself away from a huge segment of like the advertising market.
Okay. Nicholas, with the youth that you work with, do you find that some of them are obsessed with this kind of content? Everyone's looking at their phone all the time. And I got to admit, sometimes I'm guilty of that too.
Obsessed is a strong word, but nonetheless, I'm very attracted by such content simply because developmentally speaking, that's where they are at, curious about their own sexuality, their own identity, and hormones are raging, you know, and they're exploring themselves. Some safely, some not so safe. So having a platform like this, an opportunity like that, opens them to experimentation, more discovery. So if the content was appropriate, then they will learn in a more appropriate way, like Julian was talking about, more wholesome way, and then they tend to consume it in such a way that help them grow to become better individuals. But if not, then they tend to see the world only in one way, and that tend to be quite a myopic lens that you look into as far as your world is concerned. Right? So everything else takes a back seat.
Hi, my name is Steve Lai.
And I'm Teresa Tang.
And we are the hosts of the new podcast, CNA Correspondent.
From New York to Bangkok, join us as we kick back and chat with our colleagues across the globe about the latest news developments.
Look out for our weekly episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
It's increasingly hard, I imagine, because, you know, teenage boys will hang out with other teenage boys who are all looking at similar content. Can we blame the environment? Either one of you can answer this, but what are some of the driving factors behind this whole online ecosystem, which feeds the idea that you can get something quickly, you can earn money quickly, you can, you know, watch whatever you want, you can do whatever you want? This kind of freedom, is it perpetuated online?
With the clients that I work with, I can categorize them into two camps. One camp involves adults in a young person's life, family members, having to make an effort to facilitate considerations of the content that the child or young people that they have within their circles, right, to consider. So they ask very appropriate language, they set healthy boundaries. And the other camp is where adults in their life tend to be largely absent or tend to take a more liberal approach. So feel free to explore however you like to explore that space, whatever you're interested in, and do whatever you need to do. Little supervision, less guidance. Two approach has its own outcomes.
But that's not going to change, right? I mean, we can't change the family environment.
You can. So like, for example, in the first camp, we find families making more deliberate decisions to, like, for example, not expose their child, even at teenage years, devices, or at least in a measured way, allow them to use their devices and become something that's understood in the entire family and not imposing whatsoever. It's something that the family agrees together and the child also can accept the explanation. So there are adults, family units who encourage this and it's successful for them.
Sure. I mean, if the parents, you know, play a role in helping guide the kids better, do the youth you work with also want to earn a fast buck quick? So they are willing to take, more risky investments to go out on a limb, maybe even, in fact, crypto has become a real hot thing with the young ones as well.
Not everyone has the motivation to want to earn a lot of money. Some who would very much like to have the money to buy whatever they want to do because they are possibly pressured by their friends or they are very deprived in their own family circumstance, for example. Maybe they tend to want to have this a lot more. Families who are more well-resourced wouldn't have children who are motivated by such things, and they tend to look for other things. So a content that will drive them towards making a lot of money wouldn't be so effective.
So in other words, it's sometimes not by choice, but by circumstance, because you need money for some reason, and this seems like a good option.
And it's the case for some of the influencers you're talking about earlier, right? And because that was the circumstance. He was really out of desperation and he needed to make it work.
Okay.
Right? Otherwise, there's a lot of things at risk, those kind of circumstances.
And Joanne, do you notice a difference when people come in with that mindset? I mean, some of them choose to adopt this approach, this lifestyle, this occupation. Others say, I have no choice. That's why I'm doing OnlyFans, because it pays me so well, I can pay my bills.
Our observation is really these kids are growing up in a different world. They grew up with technology. They grew up with smartphones. They are being exposed to different ideas at a very young age. I mean, in the past, you don't really see how someone in, for example, Hollywood lives beyond your weekly magazines. Right now, you open Instagram and you're exposed to the lifestyle, you know, from halfway across the world. I think that in itself is a huge driver. Secondly, I think a lot of youth nowadays are a lot more passion-driven. They're looking for value outside monetary compensation. So it's not always about the money and it's not always about the quick cash. Being a content creator also affords you the flexibility. So you're not conforming to the traditional definition of work, what constitutes working hours. I can create content at 9 p.m. My employer's not going to like hound on me. And I think the most important is the younger generation is really looking for work-life balance. However they define work and life, you know, if they expect life to be a very luxurious life, but yet they want to spend as little time as possible at work, then they will resort to what we call gigs or like crypto trading, OnlyFans maybe, to make that fast cash so that they can spend a lot on their personal lives.
So would you say these guys are like our workers in the gig economy? They're all freelancers, you know, like your delivery rider?
We do see content creators as part of the gig economy or a subset of it. They are a lot more passion-driven than your Grab driver and all that. It really started out with, you know, like platforms like Fiverr, you know, where you can hire a freelance video editor. They are very much driven by passion more than anything else.
And they may have to pay a CPF soon. That's the latest.
Yes.
What would this mean for jobs as we know it today? You know, I mean, I've heard of stories where a preschool teacher gave up teaching, decided to do OnlyFans because she said, I work 2 days a week, I make the same amount of money, if not more, than what I was being paid as a teacher. Nicholas, does this change the way we move forward? That even in universities, the way you need to start teaching because the jobs of the future will be entirely different?
Yeah, interestingly, we have had conversations last week, even in the months leading to this point, we have been talking about this and how we can pivot, they say, right? So I feel it's going to change work, you know, it's going to change the learning. As far as learning is concerned, it's already the case. You can easily use your learning management system and the content is there. You can easily view your content and that's learning. And then from that viewing, you are assessed and then you take your quizzes or you take your test papers.
So is it just our old mindset? Do you think in time things will evolve and at some point we'll all be like, okay, yeah, it's actually not so bad?
I think I'm beginning to hear that already. You know, even my mom, adults who have always been in the space where it's just the traditional way of learning and teaching. But now we are beginning to hear we got to start thinking differently. We got to start at least try to do certain things or get into the tech. Just move with it a little bit. So I suspect that it's going to move into that space.
And Joanne, did you have to convince your parents when you took on this job? Then they asked you, what kind of company are you working for? Did you have to explain to them what GushCloud was all about?
Well, yes, my parents had a difficult time, honestly, but I graduated from law and it was like a huge 180-degree swing, right? Like saying, like, yeah, you know, I'm not even going to take my bar exam. I don't think this will necessarily replace, you know, certain professions. A lot of traditional roles are being made obsolete by technology while the human population continues to increase. And it's just necessary for mankind to just be creative, to create jobs for themselves. And being a content creator is just one of the jobs that has been created within the past like decade with the introduction of social media platforms and technology.
Is it a long-term job? You were talking about sustainability earlier. Do many of these content creators, can they do it for the next 30 years, you know? Or is it just kind of a high risk, high gain, but short-term?
It is not impossible, and that's something that we are trying to prove as a company as well. At GushCloud, we have worked with content creators who started from blogging 10 years ago, and then they pivoted to Instagram, getting paid per post, and then moved on to YouTube, getting paid for views, and today they are building up brands themselves. They have their own services that they provide. Essentially, they are entrepreneurs. They have been branding themselves through social media and eventually selling through their own, you know, unique set of like service or products to the mass market.
Well, I guess, you know, it's just a different world because here at MediaCorp, we have a 45-year-long service award. But who stays in the same company for 45 years nowadays, right? Yeah, so that's pretty amazing. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. I mean, I agree that those who are successful on these platforms often do work very hard at it. But I guess if my kids still came to me and said they wanted to do something like that for a living, I'd still find it a bit hard to accept. I think I would tell them, you go and get another job. If you want to do this as a hobby, I'm cool with it. But, you know, you got to have something else under your belt to fall back on, perhaps. And I feel it's my duty as a parent to equip them with that. So for all of you listening in, for our listeners as well, we hope this conversation has given you some food for thought, sparked perhaps a few conversations around the dinner table to see just how fast our world is changing. The Heart of the Matter podcast will be taking a season break. We're going to be back in January 2023, so do join us then. The team behind this podcast is Jacqueline Chan, Joanne Chan, Tiffany Ang, Daniel Lee and Crispina Robert. And I'm Stephen Chia, signing off for 2022. Bye for now.